Hello, listening friends. This week's show uncovers the refinishing secrets to the winning pieces in the May Zebra Review Monthly Contest. Plus, we'll have a panel discussion with the winners on the topic, what is required to be a successful furniture refinisher. Ever discover a dried paint drip on your piece that you didn't see when you were painting it? Well, we have a solution to this problem in our refinishing tip segment. You'll hear the answer to this week's Ask a Refinisher question. What paint and technique should I start with for my first refinishing projects? And a few contests to remind you of in our newsworthy segment. I'm your Zebra host, Lane Ball. Welcome to Zebras Before and After. I know that May seems like a long time ago, but even though we are in the 1st of July, we wanted to make sure you all had the opportunity to hear from the winners of the May Zebra Review Contest. We love these monthly contests as it gives the community another opportunity to learn from one another and recognize each other's talents. As always, let's take a few moments to recognize the four judges for the Zebra Review. They are Katie with Katie & Company Furniture Restorations, Lauren with Portland Rose Studio, Keegan with Lemon Drops Reclaimed, and Natalie with Array of Sunlight. We also want to thank our prize sponsors, really terrific group of companies and wonderful prizes, Mud Paint, D. Lawless Hardware, Surf Prep Sanding, and of course, Zebra Paint Brushes. Listeners, if you are able to check out these pieces while you listen to the podcast, they are featured on our podcast page for you to enjoy. Just go to thezebrablog.com and click on the podcast. Okay, let's hear from our winners. We have Sarah with Sitting Pretty Home Decor winning first place, Courtney with Steel Birch Studios taking second place, and Susan with Little Lou Design scoring third. Congratulations to all three of you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, honestly, I could do before and after contests continually. I really enjoy seeing these pieces, what they look like when you get them, and then, of course, how you transform them into beautiful collector's pieces. Before we talk about these pieces, I want to find out where you all are calling from. Susan, you live in Massachusetts?
I do.
So are you on the coast?
I was earlier today, but no, we're in, we're about 30 miles from Boston, so a bit inland, but we have a place down on the coast too.
Oh, how nice. Now, do you guys make your way to Boston often?
Not these days anymore, but we used to.
Yeah.
Pre-COVID,
yeah,
I guess. Know,
right. Yeah, because that's not too far if you're,
what did you say,
30 miles from Boston?
Yep, pretty close.
You know, when I was just out of college, several of my friends, we drove all the way up. Actually, we went all the way up into Ontario, but one of the places that we went to on our trip was Boston. It was my first time in Boston, and you'll have to help me, but I think it was called the Freedom Trail.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. We walked all the way around through Boston. It was, man, what an amazing city.
I know.
It was so beautiful. It was so cool to see all the new, you know, all the high rises, and then see all the old mixed in with it.
Yes. I mean,
it was breathtaking.
Definitely. I love being so close to Boston, and we used to go a lot, but you know, we have little kids now, so we don't go as often, but yeah, feel really lucky to be so close to the city.
So what's your weather like today, Susan?
Oh, today it is about 70 and overcast. So we were lucky. The past few days have been beautiful, but not so much today.
Now, do you guys have high humidity in that area?
Yes, we do. We do.
So you get the heat and the high humidity and you got to stay inside.
Yes.
It's probably very hard to do furniture refinishing outside this time.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I work in my garage and we have, thank goodness, heating and air conditioning in there. So that helps a lot.
Oh, lucky girl.
I know.
Now, you refinish furniture, but you also launched another business as well, if I'm not mistaken. And I think it's called, is it called Blue and Lou?
Yes. My friend Kate, who has been on Instagram for years, back to Blueberry Hill, has been into interior design, and she's actually the one that got me onto Instagram. And so our children go to school together. We're in the same town, and we both love home decor, and we just decided to start a little home decor subscription box. So it's just a very casual, fun thing that the two of us do together. So yeah, it's sent to people's houses. They're seasonal boxes with five or six items put together to create a nice little vignette for those people that are not comfortable decorating or don't know what to put where. It's fun, and they're, you know, per season. So we just did our spring box. We do one in the fall, winter. We're not sure if we're doing a summer one this summer just because of everything that's going on, but we'll see.
Yeah. What a great idea.
Yeah, that's cool. We enjoyed it.
Well, that certainly sounds exciting. We hope to hear that it is growing to the extent that you desire. So keep us updated.
Thank you.
Courtney, you are in Charleston. What's your weather like there, Courtney?
It is like 150% humidity and, and sunny. I'm in Charleston and the weather, I think it's in the 90s today. So we're bracing for the summer heat and, you know, we'll get through it. But it's a really pretty, I feel very blessed to live here. So.
Yeah, that's so funny when you said 150% humidity, because we say that all the time, because even here in North Carolina, you know, I love summer, but when it gets up into the 90s and then really high humidity, it's like we were talking with Susan. I mean, it's like you almost just have to stay inside because it's just so sweltering. You feel like you're in a sauna, you know?
Yeah. And I do not have air conditioned in my garage. So I am very jealous of you, girl. But I have a lot of fans and, you know, I try to bring my work inside whenever I can just to. I mean, you just need to have air conditioning and to let paint cure and, you know, all that stuff. So yeah. I try to stick to smaller pieces if possible in the summer.
Now, Courtney is on the go all the time, aren't you, Courtney?
I sure am.
You have two businesses, and we've talked about them in the past, but for any new listeners, just tell us a little bit about your other business.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't my plan to have two businesses at all, but I started out after I got sober. I launched an all-natural skincare company called Steel Birch. And so I make, you know, all different kinds of products like body scrubs and soaps. And on the side, I just started doing furniture. So once that kind of picked up as well, I mean, today I just juggle both simultaneously and it's fun. I'm, you know, always making skincare orders and then working on pieces of furniture, and it's never boring.
Do you like get time to sleep and rest?
I have a cutoff, and like once it gets dark and when I'm hungry, I'm just like, okay, this is, you know, yeah. I have a very strict relaxing time at night, so that's very helpful.
That's good. That's good to be disciplined in that way. You don't want to get burned out from it all and just continue enjoying it. Sarah, from Kentucky to Indiana.
Yes.
What's that like? It's so
weird. Gary just said yesterday, he's like, does Indiana feel like home to you? I'm like, no, I don't know that it ever will. But it's actually where I grew up in Kentucky in Louisville. We were told like Indiana was like the dark side.
Really?
Like, I don't know what it was. It was just sort of like the stigma about Indiana. But it's honestly, it's quieter over here. And we moved over here for the schools. But I still find myself saying that I'm from Louisville because just people just know where that is.
Well, you were telling us on another podcast, though, you're really not that far. I mean, what's like the distance from where you used to live in Kentucky to where you live in Indiana?
It's about a 40-minute drive. And that's how long it takes. Gary still works in Louisville. It takes about 40 minutes to get there. But to get to like downtown Louisville, it's like 28 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. it's close. They call it Kentuckiana. They call this whole area Kentuckiana. Like,
oh, really?
Well, there's like, I don't know, there's a bunch of bridges and there's a lot of commuting. It's just kind of one big area.
Well, if you get homesick, you just hop in the car and drive 45 minutes south, right?
Yeah.
So tell us, what do you have going on today with your weather?
Oh, I don't even want to talk about the humidity. And I am painting these, I don't even know, I think they're 8 feet tall, these massive bookcases for a client. And I sprayed them this morning at like 9:30. And I actually, right before we got on here, went and checked them and they're still tacky.
Yeah.
These are going to take forever.
Be for a while.
Yes.
Well, as many of you know, Sarah is our July featured artist, and we just featured her last week on the podcast and on our blog. It was really great chatting with you last week as well, Sarah.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thank you.
Okay, let's discuss your winning pieces. And just as a reminder for our listeners, May's Zebra Review theme was Before and After, highlighting the tremendous transformation that takes place in refinishing. Susan won third place with her old school desk dresser. This turned out so unique, Susan. And I mean, wow, seeing the before shows how much work you must have put into refinishing this piece. Why don't you tell us about it?
This was a really fun piece. I wasn't sure what I was going to do with it first. A friend of mine said she had an old desk in her garage that was her family's, and then her daughter used it and it was in really rough shape, and it asked if I wanted it. And at that point I had a lot of other furniture. So I said, no, thank you. Although I felt bad saying no. A couple months later, she checked in with me again and I said, oh, what the heck? And she said, well, the drawer's broken. I'm not sure. I said, oh, all right, that's fine. That's easy to fix. So ended up getting it and just trying to come up with the plan and what to do with it. I got a little inspiration from looking through Instagram and other people's sites and just decided I wanted to do like an old school chalkboard-like desk. So I thought that would be fun. And she helped me make, my friend Missy is actually on Instagram too. She makes stencils and lots of fun things. So she helped me make a stencil for the alphabet for the top of it, because I wanted it to look kind of like a chalkboard. And then we also made the little sign on the wall in the picture also. So figured green would be like old school chalkboard instead of the black. So decided to go with that milk paint. It was the first time I used Shakto Interiors milk paint and I loved it. And it was in the Clark Pond green color. And then thought some of the brass drawer pulls would look kind of cool with it and complete the look. And then just did, the top was actually leather. But I read a bunch of, watched some tutorials and read how easy it was to paint over leather. So just painted that in a black. And then it just came out. And I was pretty happy with it because there was no pressure on that one. I said, all right, it's a free piece. You know, the drawer fix was easy. What can I do that's fun with this? So just kind of came up with that and did it and was blown away when I realized I won third place.
From the before picture that you have, it looks like that left drawer was almost busted. I don't know if that's the right way to say it.
Yes, it was very broken.
So do you do all the repairs yourself structurally, or do you have help with that? Like what's
I do the easy stuff by myself, but my father is amazing with any woodwork. So if I struggle with it, he comes right out and gives me pointers and tips. And if it's beyond my abilities, he brings it to his house and brings it back all repaired. But that was an easy one. I have the clamps and wood glue and all the necessary supplies. So that was an easy fix.
I was going to ask about the drawer, if you just had to just clamp it with some glue.
Yes, it was really easy. Nothing was broken. It just, it was a dovetail drawer and it seemed to, over the years, kind of slide out. So it fit perfectly back in, used my wood glue, clamped it for 24 hours, and then we were good to go.
That's awesome. You know, I recently heard something funny, like, just before you start doing this, you see somebody that has like 100 clamps and you're like, what could I ever use 100 clamps for? And now you're just like, I need 100 clamps. I mean, I can't get
it's
enough.
It's so true. I never have enough. Same with me.
Yeah. So
can never have too many.
Great.
Thank you.
That's a good stocking stuffer for furniture refinishers, right? Just buy them some clamps.
Oh, it definitely
is. Absolutely.
No, that's great. Now, you said Clark Pond Green.
Yes.
I don't know if our listeners recall when we did the potato bin challenge, we ended up working with Kristen with Shakto Interiors on that piece. And it was so much fun. And it was funny because when I saw that this was Clark Pond, that's what Kristen chose for the potato bin. And so she had me strip it and then paint it in the Clark Pond.
And I forgot about that.
Yeah. My wife was like, oh, do you really have to get rid of this thing? Because it was so funny because we painted, or we have a chalkboard, an old school chalkboard in our house. And it's almost identical. And in fact, when I had painted it, I brought it and sat it underneath the chalkboard. And was like, oh man, that looks so cool together. It was really neat. But it has become one of my favorite greens. I mean, there's a boatload of greens out there that are really cool, but I don't know, the Clark Pond green is such a cool color, and for you to have chosen it to give it that sort of chalkboard school look to it, I mean, I don't know, it's just really spot on, really pretty.
Thanks. And I had a lot of people afterwards, you know, why'd you choose green? And but also even more people saying, oh my goodness, that's the prettiest shade of green, what color is it? So I was able to share that with people.
Now, did you use a top coat?
I did. I actually used the Chippy Barnes lilac scented wax on top of it.
Yeah, I bet that I bet that smells great.
It does.
Oh, I love using that wax.
Really
it's such a treat for my I love waxing it because it's just some aromatherapy at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Now, did you sell this piece or do you still have it?
Unfortunately, I have not sold it yet. It's the one and only piece that I haven't sold yet, ironically.
Oh, so it's for sale.
It's for sale. It is.
Oh, gosh. I'm surprised that it's not been picked up yet because it is exceptionally, really unique.
I think you have to just have the right spot for it. It probably doesn't, you know, work with everybody's homes, but I think, you know, in time, hopefully the right person will come along and be looking just for that or a piece similar to that for their child's room or something.
Well, you'll have to let people know that this was placed in a monthly contest for sure.
Yes, an award-winning piece.
Exactly right. You're exactly right.
Hey, it works.
Yes, it does.
Well, incredible results, Susan. Congratulations on winning third. Share your Instagram account for our listeners.
Thank you. It's Little Lou Designs.
Courtney, you took a rather ordinary maple chest and turned it into a really unique faux catalog style piece, and you won second place. Share what you have done with this piece. Give us the details.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because when I was working on this piece, I had like a bunch of other big projects going on. And it was other ones, like my husband had to help me with these pieces, like move them and like rebuild them basically. And then I had this very simple maple desk, dresser, you know, and everybody's seen this style. I mean, they're all over the place. And I was just looking at it and I was like, you know, he's going to kill me, but I have a vision and it's going to be complicated, but we're going to do it. And he's just like, really? You have to do this? I'm like, yes, I know. But my whole vision was, you know, to take a router and carve out the drawers. Because, you know, I believe the top drawers were carved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just wanted to do that continuously all the way to the bottom and, you know, make it kind of like a map style piece. And, you know, we were looking for the right router piece and to buy a router and we look for a week to find like the right bit that we could use. And, you know, it was just like expensive for this just one project. And I was like, you know, I just need to make a line in a couple drawers. And so I decided I was just going to saw them. So I kind of, you know, went for it and I just sawed in the middle of the bottom two drawers. I was really careful and, you know, and then I sanded and my husband thought I was crazy and, you know, but I don't know. I ended up loving how it turned out. And I don't know. It's a really cool, unique piece now. And it sold almost immediately. And there we go.
Did you use a skill saw when you sliced through those drawers?
No, a hand saw.
Really?
So I'm crazy. I really am. But
awesome.
I just measured right in the center where I knew the line had to be. And I just so carefully, you know, just took the saw and lined it up and, you know, started with really, really a small indent. But, you know, as I got the line, you know, and I kept going and eventually it was deep enough where I could sand it to make it match the top drawers. So I wouldn't recommend that for, I don't know. I went for it. I mean, I don't really know if there's a method to the madness, but it worked for this piece. So I got lucky.
That's so cool.
Tell us about the bottom, because at the bottom of this piece, there's a scallop and the scallop is no longer there. So what did you do?
Well, that was another thing. I flipped it upside down and I knew I could take off that front part that was curved. And, you know, so I knocked that out with a mallet, and then, you know, the legs still had a little bit of the curve to them. And so I just took that same saw and went for it and cut the legs straight and, you know, gave it kind of a more modern look to the bottom that I was looking for. So, I mean, it really transformed the piece and I was very happy with the outcome, but man, that I did take a saw to that thing all over the place. So
you definitely used elbow grease on this piece.
Yeah, I did.
You know, it's funny when you look at a piece like that, and I'm always amazed at the vision that you all have. You know, you walk into, you know, an antique store or a restore place or, you know, a yard sale, whatever it may be, and You really do have to look beyond the piece because you guys transform these so dramatically. But I think about that piece. I mean, I'm looking at the before and the after, Courtney, and like to have left that bottom piece on there, it would have totally changed it. It wouldn't have had the same look and the same vibe that you've created with this piece. So, I mean, that's such a complete vision that you guys have when you look at these pieces and you know what you need to do to make it what you need to make it into. So that's hats off to you and all three of you for that, because that's incredible.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Now, what color and brand of paint did you use on the body of the piece?
Well, I actually used Shecto Interiors as well. And I had a little bit of shell white and Magnolia Pure left over. So I just mixed the two colors and got a really nice light grayish that I loved. And I stained the top, I think, with driftwood. And it's just a very classic look. And I mean, I love Kristen's paint that she has. And it was a perfect fit for the style I was looking for.
Yeah, for sure. And you put a lot of hardware on this piece.
Oh my gosh, I know. I know that every refinisher can just, when you have to like re-drill so many holes and fill so many holes, that's like a whole day project in itself. But, you know, for this style, you know, I needed smaller knobs. I ended up just going to, I think, Lowe's and getting really basic tiny knobs for that. And then little card catalog things, I believe from Amazon. But yeah, there's a lot of labels and knobs on that one.
Wow, very nice work. Well, such cool results, Courtney. Did you find or hear back from the owner? Did you let them know that this was an award-winning piece?
I believe she does know, actually. She's followed me for a while, and she was really, really excited when I posted it. So I know she is cool. Also excited that it's a winning piece. So I'm glad she gets something special.
Very good. Well, share your Instagram account with our listeners.
Yeah, I'm at Steel Birch Studios on Instagram.
Sarah, this piece required some elbow grease as well from looking at the before. The wood grain is absolutely stunning. Go for it. Tell us about the process that you went through.
Oh, the process was interesting. I had been looking for a piece to do, you know, all wood. And it's can be hard to find because so many pieces need so much work or filler that they don't really lend themselves to, you know, refinishing, quote unquote. But this piece was free. It was given to me by, of all people, the receptionist at my midwife office. She follows me on social media and she's like, I have this dresser in my garage. Do you want it? And a lot of times, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, because usually it's something that's not super exciting. And she sent me the picture and I was like, it's an oak serpentine. Like, yes, of course I want it. So the finish, it was in really good condition, but the finish was really thick and flaking and like that deep reddish orange. So I started sanding it and it took me a couple of days and got it all down. And I believe I whitewashed it and it looked terrible. I think I just did like the drawers. And it was coming out really splotchy and uneven. And I easily get very defeated with furniture. Like if something isn't going the way I think it should, I get very defeated. And I was like, that's it. I'm just going to paint it. And Gary's like, no, you have a vision, like stick with it. I'm like, oh, all right. So I started sanding the whitewash off. And as I was sanding it, like it was taking just enough of it off so that the unevenness was going away, but it still had like a light look to it. So I was like, maybe I'm onto something here. So I went ahead and whitewashed the rest of it and then sanded it again. So to take like, I'd say 70% of it off. And then I went over all of it with white wax just to accentuate the grain. And that's really when it all came together. And that's when the bunny ears popped out on the front. I think it looks like little bunny ears on the wood grain. And I kept the original hardware. Some of the brass washers that go behind the poles or on the front were missing. So I spent a little time trying to find them. I contacted Derek at D Lawless and I couldn't find those washers. So I actually just went without them and it worked.
Yeah, definitely.
Now that's all I see are bunny ears on this.
See, yeah, I shouldn't have pointed it out.
The most beautiful bunny ears I've ever seen.
Well, thanks.
You know, that would have been a cool. It's funny because we just got two Holland lop-eared bunnies.
Aww.
And
cute.
They're beautiful bunnies. One is gray, and then one actually has this sort of color. That'd be a really cool stage photo if you had these bunnies like sitting right underneath the dresser there. You know?
Oh, that would be so cool. I used to have a lop-eared bunny and it was sort of like a grayish tan color.
Yeah. Oh, so is it a good pet to have a lop-eared bunny?
Of all the rabbits I had, she was the most psychotic. So no comment.
Oh, no. I got your work cut out for you, Lane.
Boy, I do for sure. Wow. Boy, what a rabbit trail we just went on. Okay, back to our piece. Susan, you had a question for Sarah?
So, Sarah, what do you use for sanding? Do you have any? There doesn't look like there's too many nooks and crannies on that. So, not maybe too challenging, although I know you had a lot of sanding to do, but what do you use to sand something like that?
I use my Surf Prep sander.
Oh, it's nice. Okay.
I love it, especially for like if you see the legs have like a little bit of rounded profile to them and then the drawers mm-hmm. are curved, you know, having the sponge attachment able, you know, I can even strip sand curved feet, you know, all of that stuff. And that's definitely a project that I never would have attempted to do a refinish on before I had my Surf Prep because just all the thought of hand sanding would have been too daunting.
Yes, I just got a Surf Prep sander about a month ago and I love it. So that it looks beautiful.
They are life changing.
Yeah, I tell you what, I've been so impressed with the Surf Prep. The development of this form of sanding with the foam, I mean, it's just, it's so cool to see their Instagram account and they highlight some of the work from other refinishers and you guys maybe have been highlighted as well, but to see how that just sort of wraps around these intricate details. I mean, it looks like that's like all you want to do is just sand all day.
Yeah, I love sanding and I feel weird saying that, but I really do. It's become part of the process that I really enjoy now.
Yeah, that's cool. We always like to say that about our paintbrushes because not a lot of people like to paint, but we always say, you know what? Being able to create application-specific brushes for specific applications does change the experience. So, hey, we'll just chime in there, right, with Surf Prep sanding on how much easier it is to make the process more fun, right?
It definitely does.
I totally agree.
Well, Sarah, I have to ask you this question. Did you sell this piece or did you do like you've done on some of your pieces, find a place in your house to put it?
I did both. I tried to put it in my son's nursery, but it was just too big. It was very deep. I think I tried a couple other spots and so I listed it and a lady who has tried to get so many of my pieces and always misses out, got it. So I was really excited for her.
That's cool. Well, I hope you convey to her as well. This is a first place piece. So very cool. Well, you really showed your versatility because you normally paint a lot of your pieces, but this one you threw as a curveball, and we're really glad you did. Beautiful work. Share your Instagram account with our listeners.
Thank you. It's Sitting Pretty Home Decor.
Support for this podcast is made possible by Zebra, makers of the Palm Pro Paintbrush Series. The Palm Pro looks like no other brush you've ever seen. It is designed specifically to fit in the palm of your hands, leveraging your hand's most comfortable position, trading hand fatigue for comfort and control. Exactly what you need when painting any application. The Palm Pro comes in a 2-inch thin filament pack out, which makes it just right for cutting in next to trim, whether on a wall or a furniture piece. It also comes in a 2-inch thick filament pack out, which makes it just right for painting on surfaces like doors, trim, or furniture tops. The Palm Pro is the only brush designed to be an extension of your hand. Well, it's time for our Zebra panel discussion. I really enjoy these segments as it gives you all, the expert refinishers, time to chat on topic with each other. I chime in periodically to ask a question or two. I know this will be fun and informative for our listening friends. Today, our topic is what is required to be a successful furniture finisher? And I know this is a pretty broad topic, and we could probably discuss this in multiple podcasts, but I want you all to just share your thoughts on this and let us know from your perspective what is required. And just as a reminder, no rules here. Our goal is to have a great discussion on topic between the three of you. So what say you, panel? Take it away.
There are so many things. When I knew we were going to be talking about this, I just started thinking like of all the different aspects of refinishing. And I think a lot of them apply to all of us. But I think for me to be successful and to keep being successful, I kind of constantly have to reinvent myself. And I think you have to be willing to push yourself all the time and outside of your comfort zone and outside of your box. Because it's so easy to get stuck in like a creative rut.
You know, and I was just talking with somebody else who was starting a project, and you know, she was trying to stencil or something, and her project came out like not good at all, and she threw it away. And I'm just thinking about all of the how many of those like projects I've started that like aren't turning out like I want, or you know, it's just like the perseverance that you have to have, like, and the
yes.
mistakes you have to make, and you have to continue to do that, you know, so you learn the skill and so you get out on the other side, you know, and continuing to do that over and over again.
So I think I learned best by making mistakes, because then you never make this, or you hope not to make the same mistake again. Trial and error, I guess.
And you learn that it's not the end of the world. You know, if you make
Correct.
A mistake, like you can fix it, you can move on, you can change paint colors, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And that's, I think, how a lot of my pieces have turned out. I think it was you, Sarah, that were saying you whitewashed it and hated it and then ended up sanding it and turned out beautifully.
And if I had, and I almost threw in the towel on that piece and painted it, you know, and just, but I was like, no, I'm going to, you know, like Gary said, stick with what you have and stick with your gut. And you also have to just not be afraid. Like it's just paint. It's just wood. It's just stain. You know, anything can be changed or fixed.
Right. You can take it all down again if you need to, although we don't like to have to sand it all down if you have to, but it's always an option.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I think another thing that is so important is photography, like being able to capture your work and create your brand, you know,
yes.
to like stand out. I think that is so important.
Yeah. I think the ultimate goal is to have a look where you don't need a watermark. Somebody can just instantly recognize. And that doesn't mean you have to have the best equipment or you have to have a set of lights or 1,000 staging props. It's just perfecting, like you said, your brand and your look and, you know, finding the right window or the right wall, whatever it is.
Yeah. And that takes trial and error too. Like, you know,
I
feel like I spent the first year and a half doing this, like trying to figure out where I'm supposed to like capture these pieces, you know, and how. And, but I think once somebody, like, I think once they are presenting their work and it's clear and, you know, they start to be recognized. And I think, I don't know, I just think it's such a part of that process of, you know, finding success.
Yeah, you've been a good example of you can use different walls because you've bounced all around the place with your
I
walls
sure
and
have.
Backgrounds, but it's still all recognizable as you. So that's, you know, there's something to be said for that.
Oh, thank you. That's good. I'm trying to find the right window in this house. I mean, as sunny as it is in Charleston, I mean, I have one east-facing window. So I do my best, but thank you.
And I like how you're saying, you know, I heard that in a podcast prior too, trying, you know, developing your own style and look so people instantly recognize that it's your piece. I'm maybe working my way there because I like to do all different things. I get bored doing the same, well, not the same thing, but similar style. So I try to venture out. I think I'm still trying to find what my style is and moving forward. But I do get inspiration all the time from both of you and others to see kind of that common, the way you stage your pieces or photograph them. And it looks truly professional. And I'm hoping to get there soon. Working on it.
That photo that you took for this piece, the green one, I mean, it's gorgeous. It's simply staged and, you know, it's just, you see your work in the front and center, you know, and I think that is the most important thing. So you did a really good job as well.
Well, thank you.
Another thing I think that's important for being successful, and maybe it's just me, but I think you have to be good with people.
Oh my gosh.
Well, you deal with so many different types of people, you know, whether you do custom work and it's clients or, you know, you're selling to people. There's a lot of personalities out there. And you have to have some people skills, or at least be willing to have people skills.
Especially if you're doing custom. I mean, I personally don't. I try not to. But more and more times I've seen and heard horror stories of just communication not being broken down.
Very simple things
not getting communicated, whether it's, you know, from the artist or the customer. It doesn't matter. I think that is so vital. So I totally agree with you.
I over communicate. I communicate. Like if I have a custom piece, it's every day. I'm sanding your piece. I got my paintbrush out, you know, because communication is very important with people.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. Through the process. So they're not, you know, so there's no surprises at the end.
Yeah.
Well, it's so funny because I've done, when I first started out, I had a situation where I was literally showing the steps of doing it. And then when I was done, I was ready to get it out and have her buy it, you know, and she's like, oh, I didn't know you're going to be done so fast. I can't get it for like a month, you know, so situations like that, what you're going off of what you said, Sarah, it's like just being patient and not everything's going to work out very easily. You know, and it's just not getting defeated and taking it so personal. I mean, man, there's going to be problems that arise out of whether it's communication or just different viewpoints or whatever, but things will happen.
Or comments.
Yes.
People make comments. You shouldn't have painted that, or why did you pick that color? And you got to kind of get a little bit of a tough skin.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, it's like, I just feel like in the end, if you love what you do and you know you're treating people right and you're selling your work and living your life, like that's what matters, you know.
Yep. I was trying to think earlier about what's important as we were talking about to become the successful furniture refinisher, and I think something that I was talking to my husband too, and he said you seem to have a vision, you know, you can see a bunch of pieces and know what's going to work. So I think that is really important, just to see the different pieces of furniture, know what has potential. You know, some of the ugliest pieces have turned into my most beautiful pieces that nobody wants, I get for free, and then it ends up just being amazing because I know it has the structural integrity, or I know how to reinforce it, or you know, how to change the hardware. Just I think knowing what to look for in the pieces to see what potential it has is important too. So you don't, you know, get pieces that aren't going to last or pieces that you really can't modify, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I think it's easier for some people to see those things instinctually than it is for others, but I do think it's something you can learn to, you know, totally. If it doesn't come naturally to you, you can learn to see, you know, that this piece should come off or it needs legs or, you know, whatever it is. But I do think it's something you do have to kind of learn, because if you can't do that and you're just painting the pieces as they are, I don't know that there's, you know, you kind of lose your growth by just doing that.
How do you learn that, Sarah? I mean, because that's actually a really good point to make. And I think a lot of people probably would ask that is, you know, how do you learn that skill that is so integral, as Susan said, into the refinishing field? How do you learn to be a visionary on that?
I think it's just study, study, study. It's Pinterest, furniture artists on Instagram, and catalogs. You know, I think I've talked about this before, but I subscribe to a lot of really high-end catalogs that I can't afford anything in, because I like looking at what's trendy. And if I know, you know, I kind of have the building blocks for that in my head, I'm able to look at a piece and think of, you know, how it could look like what all these other things I've seen.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing, you know, like what if you pick your favorite brand, you know, that has a bunch of, you know, different pieces in their line, like what about those pieces, you know, draws you to them, or what about those pieces are popular? And it's usually, you know, a certain type of style or finish, you know, and you start to be able to take that vision into, you know, a piece that is on Facebook Marketplace. And I think it takes a little bit of time, but it's definitely, you know, something you can learn.
Do you find your subscription rate runs out, Sarah, because you're not buying from those particular catalogs?
Yeah, come to think of it, there's a couple I don't get anymore.
You just put them in Gary's name, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Probably a year or so ago, I picked up a piece of furniture that was on Facebook Marketplace. They said solid wood, and I got there, and it was particle board. It was far from solid wood. And I had already paid them ahead of time. So, you know, I'm learning, okay, make sure you get there, check it out first. But I was, you know, I still took it because I told them I was going to, and then I didn't make that mistake again. But also it's doing things once and realizing, okay, that worked well or that didn't, and then moving forward from there.
That makes me think of something else that I think you need to be successful is to make sure you're not over investing. You know, if you're able to transform a piece, you know, I mean, obviously you don't want to cut corners, you know, buy the materials that you need, but don't spend, you know, $10 a piece for poles and, you know, spend $100 on feet, you know, because you're not going to make any money, and that's...
He won't get it back. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something to sort of figure out before you dive into it, you know, how much you're going to end up investing before you start spending it all.
And I do think there is... You know, having some good brushes and good paint does make the biggest difference. You know, like
what
that's
are
where
your favorite
I like.
Brushes, Courtney?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you'd ask. I love the 2-inch angled brush by Zebra. I use that. I was using that earlier today, actually. But right. I do think having a handful of brushes is, you know, that are going to give you a good smooth finish is like. It's ideal, you know, and good paint. But yeah, like then you just don't, if you're spending all this money on the piece itself, like you have to take into consideration like how much you'll get back for it, you know, how much someone else will be willing to spend. And I think there's just a lot of different factors that go into the whole management of the money of all of this, right?
Absolutely.
I think another thing too, is we commented a little bit on the, you know, good photography, taking pictures, but also staging, which I think that's something everyone always mentions. I try to spend the time staging my pieces properly, and then they typically sell very quickly. And a lot of my friends will say, how do you sell it so quickly? You know what? And I don't know. But then I'll look at some other pieces of furniture on Facebook Marketplace that have been repainted and they just sit there for a while. But I think the staging does have a big part to do with, you know, being successful in selling and selling quickly. If it looks professional.
Absolutely.
And
that's something else you can learn. There's paid Facebook groups. There's
e-books.
There's all kinds of stuff on Instagram. Yeah. There's things that you can, there's like foundation things there. Deer Run Vintage does all kinds of little tutorials that are super informative. There's always people that you can learn from with the staging. That's something that you can learn too.
And always less is more.
Yes.
Yes.
And I got Fallon's book on staging, or she has a book on a lot of helpful hints for market house restorations. And that was, I actually got that for my friend Kristen, and it was very helpful.
Yeah, that is a good ebook. I got it as well when I first started out.
Well, what would you guys say is the biggest obstacle in achieving success for each of you? And it may be different for each of you, but what would you say is the biggest obstacle that you have found in achieving success as a furniture refinisher?
For me, it's time. I have a 7 and 8 year old at home with me. And now with the homeschooling, although it's summertime now, but just finding enough time to collect the furniture, to, you know, paint it, restore it, photograph it. So time for me is the biggest obstacle. If I could spend every, you know, 10 hours out there working on my pieces a day, that would be great, but that's not practical and it just doesn't work. So that's my greatest challenge. I find I end up working late at night once the kids are sleeping, but that's my obstacle that I'm trying to find ways to work through that.
I think for me, my biggest obstacle is what I talked about earlier, and is the reinventing. I will find something that's sort of unique to me and my style and my photos, and I will start seeing it other places, and I'll start seeing it more and more, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's getting run out. And so I'm constantly looking for ways to, you know, to have my brand be unique to me. And as the industry grows and grows and you see so much of the same things, it becomes a struggle to, you know, keep yourself fresh and creatively reinvent yourself. And that's been my biggest obstacle.
Do you have a lot of furniture refinishers in your area?
No, not really. I have two. One of them I'm really close with. She lives about 20 minutes from me, and her style could not be more drastically different from mine. And it's awesome because we like shop for each other.
Yeah, that's perfect.
She goes into the thrift store and she's like, oh, this is a you piece. But if we had the same style, I don't know if we would be so close.
I think that's a really good point. Possibly my biggest obstacle is just like the, gosh, like getting the piece, like the delivery, the pickup, like the lugging the furniture around and storing it and getting pictures of it. I mean, just like, you know, I try to have pieces out pretty often, and it's just all of this transportation and storing and, you know, just getting it to the customers. I mean, that takes a lot of time and, you know, just it's exhausting too. So, I mean, I wish I had some kind of like moving company. I was just, you know, that was always running these things for me and helping. And I wish, I wish I had a really nice and big staging area that always had really bright natural light.
Oh, I know.
You know, I know. Currently, I take apart my whole sitting room and move the couch and chairs.
Yep.
And my big fit, you know, and it's just like, this is so crazy. So I just feel like I could get a lot more done if I had a different setup somehow, but still a challenge, and it's worth it in the end.
It is, but it's exhausting and it's hard on our bodies. You know, I don't know if you've looked into like anybody in the area that I know there are a few people where we were in Louisville that would transport stuff within a reasonable range for a good price. And that was something I was looking into before we moved to the middle of nowhere. But just like you said, you know, picking stuff up and then bringing it home and then packing it back up and delivering it. It's so time consuming. So I think if you're able to find anybody that can help with that, it's actually crazy what people are willing to pay. I've always been surprised by what people are willing to pay to have a piece delivered.
Oh, I know. That surprises me too.
It's just so wise, you know, like why not have people who like actually are movers, like take care of the moving of the job that I don't want to do, you know? So it's I think that'll be something I focus on here.
You just need to hire. You just need to hire a VP of logistics.
Totally, you're hired, Lane.
Hey, listen.
Yeah, Lane just.
No. I would not be. Let me just clarify. That was a recommendation to find an expert person.
So you'll
who's
start
good at
next
logistics.
Week. Sounds good.
Oh man, I am in trouble. Actually, you're in trouble. Oh man. Well, great panel discussion on what is required to be a successful furniture refinisher. It is fun to get multiple perspectives and to see where you guys overlap on your opinions. A special thank you to all three of you for joining us today. Stay safe and stay well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lane.
If you have a refinishing tip that you would like to share, send me an email at lane@enjoyzebra.com. Put refinishing tip in the subject line and describe the tip in the email. Today's refinishing tip comes from Ashley with Refined by Ash.
Have y'all ever had one of those late night painting sessions and then you wake up the next morning excited to see your hard work, but then you're surprised to find one of those pain in the neck drips? I used to spend so much time trying to sand them out, and I'd even sand through my primer down to the wood. That, of course, caused more trouble than a solution. I finally discovered a better way to fix drips. The trick is to use a nice, sharp, flat utility knife blade or paint scraper blade that you'd use to scrape paint off glass or windows. Start your blade at the top of the drip, hold it at an angle that is just almost flush with the surface, and slide down with very light pressure. Be careful not to angle into the wood or you risk gouging into your surface, and the paint will come off in curls. Repeat as necessary. and if needed, lightly sand with a 220 grit or fine pad. And there you have it. It's like the drip never happened. I hope this helps somebody out there and saves you time. Happy refinishing, everybody.
Thanks, Ashley. A great suggestion for those aggravating paint drips that can sometimes be missed, especially on those pieces that have multiple areas to paint. If you would like to learn more about Ashley and her work, you can follow her on Instagram at Refined by Ash. That's R-E-F-I-N-E-D by Ash. When refinishers ask each other questions, you know they are going to be helpful and insightful. In our Ask a Refinisher segment, we give you the opportunity to ask another refinisher of your choice a refinishing question. If you have a question that you would like to ask and have it shared on the podcast, reach out and let us know your question via email at lane@enjoyzebra.com. Today's question is for expert refinisher Krista of Deer Run Vintage. If you would like to learn more about Krista and her work, you can follow her on Instagram at Deer Run Vintage. Hi, Krista. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Getting ready for a little bit of heat here in the South, but I guess that's to be expected. It's summertime, right?
Yep. Same here in the Midwest. Yes. Very hot and muggy.
Yeah. Well, tell us, how are you and your family doing, and how's your refinishing business?
Everything is really, really good, really busy, kind of on both fronts, actually. My family has a lot of big events happening at this moment. My youngest son just graduated from high school. We actually were able to have a graduation ceremony, which was awesome. I know a lot of seniors didn't get to have that this year, which is sad. Mm-hmm. And I've got a middle son who is getting married this Friday. After that, then we'll be preparing to ship my youngest off to basic training. So lots of big life events happening in our family right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. That is a lot. You'll need to stay busy with your refinishing business.
Yeah. Once I'm kind of the empty nester, then I'm lucky that I have this refinishing thing going on. But even like with the pandemic that's been going on for these last few months, I've been almost more busy with my painting because I feel like people are kind of maybe bored at home. And so they look at their furniture and like, I should have her repaint this, or I need it for that area or whatever. So yeah, business has kind of picked up over the pandemic, interestingly, which is super lucky for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It has been so interesting talking to people of different careers and how this has affected, people, but it seems as though most people in the refinishing business, there's been some nuances with, trying to find pieces and, to refinish. But as far as the business itself, it appears that most people have fared really well. So that's certainly encouraging and a huge blessing. And congratulations with son graduating and a son getting married. I mean, that is a ton of stuff going on, but that's cool. That's cool news. That's good to hear.
Thank you.
Well, we asked several folks that are interested in refinishing or refinishing newbies what questions they have for professional furniture refinishers, and we are having experts like Krista to answer these questions. These questions will be featured here on our podcast in our Ask a Refinisher segments. Today's question for Krista is, what paint and technique should I start with for a first project?
That's a question I get asked a lot of times as well. And I think the first thing I would say is choose a smaller piece, like, maybe a small table or a chair or something along those lines. Don't start off with the humongous dresser or, china cabinet or something, because things can go wrong in projects. And if you've got a big piece like that, it can just feel more defeating than it has to. So start small. And I think the first kind of paint I started with was chalk paint. And there's lots of different brands out there, but chalk paint in general is good because it's kind of forgiving and it's easy. There's not a whole lot of prep work. I think you still want to clean whatever piece you're going to be doing, but you don't really have to sand and do a lot of prep work before you put some chalk paint down. Also, sometimes chalk paint tends to be thick, depending on what brand you're using. And so then that can leave brush marks, which not everybody likes that look. And so what you can do for that is use a high quality paintbrush like a Zebra brush, but also you could water it down. Just add a little bit of water and stir it in and that thins it out. And then you don't have the brush marks that sometimes people think are typical with chalk paint. And you can also sand it away.
Krista, that's a really good point about the chalk paint. Because I think a lot of people, they see different types of styles and different types of techniques, and they want to try those things, but they're overwhelmed with, am I going to be able to achieve that look on the first go around? And to be able to start with a piece that is smaller certainly makes sense, but also using chalk paint. And I like what you said too about the fact that chalk paint is forgiving. we really need that when we're the newbies, when we're starting out. But also, right. I think the prep work sometimes overwhelms folks as well. So because the chalk paint, you know, adheres really well to surfaces, then I would think that would be a really great way to go. What would you say as well about sealers?
I think the easiest way to seal something, and is honestly what I do most often, is just putting a coat of hemp oil on there. It's just something that you can brush on, mm-hmm. let it sit for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then you wipe it back off with like a lint-free cloth, and that helps seal the paint down. I think a lot of people will think, oh, well, chalk paint, that means you're going to do a wax sealer, and you certainly can, but it's not the easiest and maybe not the best for a first-time project, because sometimes you get it on too thick or too thin or not even, or you buff it too much and then it shines. And so, you know, it takes some experience to get the wax part down, even just with the clear wax. Mm-hmm. You know, never mind adding the colors that waxes can give you as well. So right. just very basic to me would be using the hemp oil. Same thing would kind of go with any kind of a poly or a hard coat that you'd put mm-hmm. on there. It takes some experience, because your first time shot, you may not get it to look as well as you'd like it to. So best advice, I think, would be using hemp oil.
Now, does the hemp oil require more than one coat?
I think on the directions, which I haven't read in a very long time, it might suggest a couple of coats, but honestly, I usually just do one coat. But then, you know, after time, maybe a year or two, if it starts looking more chalky again, kind of dried out, then you can reapply the hemp oil. Mm. And it's super easy to do, so I don't feel like that's something that takes away from using the hemp oil.
Well, with all the experience that you have, I mean, you turn out some really beautiful pieces. Are you drawn to one particular type of paint, like chalk paint, or do you really mix it up a lot, like go from one piece to the next to different types of paints?
I do mix it up a lot. Honestly, I don't use chalk paint regularly. If I have a customer that has requested that I use it, then I will. My favorite by far would be powdered milk paint, because that's the kind that chips naturally on its own. But right. I would not recommend that for a first-time furniture refinishing job, because it takes some experience. You got to kind of know what to expect, maybe listen to podcasts about it, or, you know, go onto the internet and find more information. But I think it's a really cool look. I've got several chippy pieces just in my home. But yeah, for the first-time newbies, I would not suggest that they use the powdered milk paint. I also have used a lot of fusion mineral paint, which I think is another one that would be a good suggestion, because it goes on easily. And I've used a lot of the Chippy Barnes ambulant paint. I mean, there are other options out there. I guess I just kind of say chalk paint first, just because that was what I went to first. And like I said before, it's forgiving if you're going to do any kind of, you know, distressing on it afterwards and you make a mistake in that, you just throw some more paint on there and try again. So super easy.
Yeah. And I've heard other refinishers make the similar comments as well from their experience. So really excellent advice. Well, we really appreciate this great answer to the question for a lot of newbies out there. I know they appreciate your expertise on this particular subject. So we appreciate it, Krista. Listen, you have a great day, and I know you got to get back to probably preparation and planning for a wedding.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, take care and enjoy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Zebra Review July 2020 theme of Colors of Your Country is open for entries until July 31st, 2020. The community of refinishers is global. It's international. We thought it would be fun to have you paint your contest entry pieces in at least one color that represents your country's colors. It can also be a multicolored piece if you want to paint it in all the colors of your flag. Use the hashtag #TheZebraReview and you'll have your piece before a judging panel, as they will choose three winners. Great prizes await the winners from Shakto Interiors Milk Paint, D. Lawless Hardware, Surf Prep Sanding, and Zebra Paint Brushes. All pieces refinished from January 2020 to July 31st, 2020 are eligible for entry. Zebra Collective Summer Quarterly Contest is open for entries as well. There are so many ways to illustrate and evoke the summer through furniture design, from vibrant colors to whimsical, cheery themes to natural and tropical vibes. Make sure you tag your pieces with the hashtag Zebra Collective. A huge thank you to our prize sponsors, who range from Fusion Mineral Paint, Steel Birch Botanical Skincare, The Quote House Prints, and our Zebra Paint Brushes. All pieces that were refinished from May 1st, 2020 through July 25th, 2020 may be entered. We can't wait to see all your summer-inspired pieces. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Zebra Blogs Before and After Furniture Refinishing Podcast. Today's episode is also featured on thezebrablog.com, along with contact information for today's guest. Your comments and suggestions for future episodes are always welcome, and we encourage you to share those by clicking on the podcast slide in our header at thezebrablog.com. That's zebra with an I, blog.com. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and happy refinishing.